How's your day going, Seth? How are you feeling? You back from the dead?
I mean, which day is it? Is really my question.
Is it Monday? You're living in the future?
I have no idea.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 564 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Foz Mamoon. Gentlemen.
Good evening.
Evening.
You guys have had some travels the last 2 weeks.
I'm concerned that it's evening.
It's afternoon for me.
So you're familiar with the concussion protocol?
Yeah.
Right? Who are you? Where are you? Why are you here? If you can't answer those three questions, you're probably effed up.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be a traveler protocol, which is also date and time related. Do you know what time of day it is where you are?
No.
Hey, it is.
Because are you struggling with that today?
I have no clue. I mean, it's dark out, but I live in New England, so it could be dark out at like 3:30 in the afternoon. I don't know.
And you flew back. When did you land? Yesterday?
I mean, I'm okay-ish. I'm definitely jet-lagged. I landed in New Hampshire just after 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And we're recording this at 7:30 on Sunday, my time.
Yeah, you're pretty rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because how Asia is like Korea. Korea's 14 hours ahead.
Of me, yeah.
So it's 8 in the morning almost there?
9:30 in the morning Monday in Korea and Japan right now.
Yeah, it's like pretend you're just living in the future, man.
Yeah. Roll great. It's pretty swell.
We'll talk about your trip and Foz's trip in the Patreon segment, if that's
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
We do have a story from a listener about an AirAsia flight.
It was Asiana.
Their Asiana canceled flight.
Yeah.
And cabotage. So explain this to me, Seth, because I'm reading through this and my head hurts already.
Yeah. So person bought a ticket from Seattle to Guam. Possibly bought two tickets. It's a little hard to tell if it's a Reddit post. And so, you know, there's a lot of reading between the lines and trying to figure out what really happened. But basically showed up at the Asiana check-in counter in Seattle and they said, what's your final destination? And the person said Guam. And they're like, cool, you're not flying with us. He's like, no, I bought a ticket. See, it's okay. And they're like, nope, you can't do it. And apparently what they did is they bought separate tickets to try to beat the cabotage rules. Okay. And I don't know if they were trying to check a bag through or what, but because they had no basically stay in Korea, Asiana wouldn't board them, cancel their ticket, didn't give them their money back. Guys posted these like out $700 or something, plus I had to buy a new Delta ticket. And it was sort of the bizarreness of like, what is cabotage? Why is this happening? Why isn't this legal? All those sorts of things came up. But one of the particularly amusing things in the thread is that apparently the check-in desk, and again, taking all with a grain of salt, said, oh, well, you're staying less than 5 days in Korea, so it's not legal. And 5 days is an absolutely bizarre.
It's just made up.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of is that in some cases, I think maybe 5 days is transit without visa for like some China, maybe.
Yeah.
Usually it's 1 day or 3 days, but China had a couple ports where it was extra long.
Is it six days where it's 144 hours?
Okay, so that's not even that. Yeah, I don't know where the 5 days came from. That part seems completely absurd, and it honestly may have been the person misremembered what was said. But yeah, if you know, the short version is you can't use a foreign airline to fly between two U.S. cities. And if you are doing it and come up with a way to make it happen by buying separate tickets, don't tell the airline that.
So here's where I'm. Would Air Canada, would they do something like this? Like, say you found something cheap, Newark to Toronto to I don't know, Denver. Yeah. Would they stop you?
They wouldn't let you. They wouldn't board you if you try to check something all the way through.
Check a bag all the way through. You don't think they would? But if they wouldn't, they'd be okay with two separate tickets, you think?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. Yes, they would. Now, we know from experience that Continental didn't care. Or United.
Let's talk the real good stuff. Avianca.
No.
Right there. Light Mile. This was the old, or I think they finally patched it. I want to say this has probably been several years now, but Avianca used to let you book the, you used to book, I think, a United award via Asia. but they somehow had Guam still in the United States, so the award pricing was low, if I remember correctly.
So you just route it through there?
Yeah, and if you did throw away, if you threw away the segment to Guam and you got a super cheap ticket to either, you know, to Tokyo usually, I guess. And someone showed up, and maybe it was with a foreign airline. I don't remember. Someone like showed up and had the ticket and got in a fight with the check-in agent because something went sideways and eventually got it, Avianca eventually like patched that hole because it got stupid.
This is almost as good as the U.S. Airways, Russia.
Yeah.
Eastern Russia is in Europe. Route it through Korea. It'll be fine.
Russia was in Asia.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Oh, Western Russia was in Asia, right? Moscow was in Asia.
Yeah. All of Russia was in Asia.
Yeah.
I got it backwards. Thanks, Fuzz. Someone speaking from experience, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
That was LH No Pants, right?
No, that was a different trip.
Okay.
This was when we showed up in Hong Kong thinking we had an overnight, only to realize the overnight was really like 6 hours later because someone couldn't do time zone math after a schedule change.
Well, this is the test that Seth is talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Where are you? When are you? Yes. All right, let's talk about Airbus issues. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Last week's episode was terribly incoherent, and for that, I apologize. Jason and I were pretty drunk when we recorded, so I don't know exactly how it turned out. But we talked briefly then about the grounding of all the A320s, and this was everything globally. Problem with the aileron controllers. I can say that word this week. I couldn't say it last week. I really couldn't. I had to have Jason say it for me. And there was concern that it was going to be this massive issue and planes were going to be grounded for weeks and we didn't know how airlines were going to respond. And it turns out that of 6,000 active A320 family planes that needed to be checked, some were already okay and, you know, stayed in service. The rest got resolved relatively quickly. There's a little bit of a trickle. It's truly a trickle of remaining planes. I want to say Airbus put out a release that it was like under 100 by Monday morning.
Wow.
And it started Friday afternoon, Thursday afternoon, something like that. So
I saw some like really, I would say, not smart takes on this where it's like, this is Airbus's Boeing moment.
I'm like, yeah, you should stop reading my social media timeline. No.
No, it was rough. It was rough. And it's not. Like, look how quickly Airbus was on top of this. Like, and the amount of issues that they even had weren't minimal, I think. The planes that actually showed signs of this.
So I mean, it's kind of crazy that they had to downgrade the software to me still.
I mean, that makes sense, right? Go backwards in time. It always works better in COBOL.
Actually, did you just say that?
It's funny, actually, you mentioned that separately from everything else. At AWS reInvent this week, or last week, apparently United had a big presentation about how they're migrating off of shares.
Oh, that explains everything that's going on with their...
They're not there yet. But that is an active project that they're in the middle of. And what I don't understand about that, and I haven't gone back and checked with our listener who shared it with me, is there isn't a PSS like based on an AWS platform right now that I'm aware of. And so I'm not sure why this was an AWS thing and where it all comes together. But like by 2028 or something, apparently shares is supposed to be retired.
So, I mean, I guess they're, but are they actually retiring it or are they just containerizing it and putting it on AWS?
It could be that. I really don't know. It was an interesting, there's like two pictures of slides from the presentation. I'll see if I can find the post and share it with you guys. But
which with everything going on with Cloudflare the last 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Did they have a second outage?
They had a second outage.
Okay.
That was like much more, it was minimal. It was less impact. But like with everything going on with them, I would be questioning if I was an CIO, I'd be questioning any cloud deployment stuff where it's mission critical. Like, don't we hire people to have server rooms? It's idiotic that we're,
And look, we could go down an entire tangent about this, right? If you move yourself to the cloud, you're opening yourself up to more exposure from a security perspective.
Well, yeah. And outage perspective,
right? You have no, like, when it's your own data center, you have someone to go yell at to go figure out what's going on. When it's someone like AWS, they're not going to give you any information, nor can you drive urgency.
Yeah. I mean, and the amount of stuff that's like on AWS today that is critical that like went offline with their outage and then with Cloudflare's outage. Like it's a large amount of stuff. Like Alaska basically went offline. Their entire website and app went offline.
That was Azure, wasn't it?
That one was Azure. Cloudflare took out
Delta.
Delta.
They took out everybody, but really took out Delta.
And then AWS took out, there was something else that AWS took out. Netflix, half of Netflix runs on AWS.
What I want to understand is I know you're supposed to put your data closest to your customers and all those things, but why the hell is anybody still using AWS US East 1, since that's the one that always crashes?
Just move it down the road. Put it in Philly. I hear it's better down there.
Yeah. Anyways.
So funny story about that. Even if you don't put it into East 1, you're dependent on East 1. Because a lot of their backend infrastructure lives in the East 1.
Because it was the first site, I know. But it's, anyways. So back to airplanes now for a second. So the original Airbus situation got resolved pretty quickly. And then like 2 days later, there was another set of stories that came out. And I was, traveling through Asia and not really paying attention. Like, didn't we already fix this? Apparently there is a metallurgy problem in some fuselage panels.
Whoa.
And they had to not install, or they had to like do more inspections and delay some deliveries to the point that they've only taken a 30 aircraft official hit on planned deliveries for the year, but it's still a lot.
Is it like a specific batch of metal that they're like concerned about, and so they're going back and looking at everything that's in that batch, or are they not being that transparent?
I don't have all the details. It was while I was gone.
Okay. I actually didn't see how that,
and I just saw like the news headlines. I know Lufthansa said, but it was some delivered airplanes also had to be inspected with what was going on with these.
Mm.
But the net of it was 30 fewer planes planned for delivery. And also Airbus has to deliver like double November's airplane count in December to hit their target.
Wow.
So, typical end of year push, but good luck.
Yeah. I mean, how can you throughput more planes? I mean, I guess add workers, work shifts, longer shifts. I don't know.
There is, in theory, a way to sort of push the line a little harder, but I don't know. We'll see.
You're not holding your breath.
I am not. I am definitely not. No, the shares thing, they want to have done by 2030.
4 years.
Well, I mean, to be fair, how many airlines have said that they want to migrate into a new platform in the next 5 years over the last 30 years?
I mean, some of them actually do it.
And how well do they do it?
Yeah.
Right. Well, think of how much money AA dumped into Jetstream and where they were 5 years after they started that project.
Yeah. I don't know. The sort of...
Because the difference in this case is it's not like they're moving to another platform like all the others. It's like AA with Jetstream where they were building a new platform.
Yeah, that's the part I don't entirely understand here. Is United actually building its own in-house PSS? Because if so, what the hell, man?
God help us home. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't think it's good for anybody.
I mean, if they actually truly invest in it, it might not be a bad thing, but are they really going to do that? Right? Like, the problem is everyone says Amadeus is great. Amadeus has a lot of problems. And particularly around departure management, when you talk to people who use it, and they're like, yeah, oh yeah, we can't do this. Like, as a great example, Air Canada can't tell you what class it will SDC you into because Amadeus isn't able to tell it.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
So if you have a first class seat, you say on an SDC, it'll say, sure, we got seats on the 1230, but it won't tell you if it's coach or first.
Exactly. And it'll push you into coach, doesn't even show you before confirming, it confirms it. And next thing you know, you're in the back of the bus.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Amadeus, let's talk about Alaska getting slots from AA at Heathrow, which that's, I'm going really roundabout. Cause like,
I was gonna say, where does Amadeus have to do with any of that?
BA somehow. So Alaska, Seth is like holding his hands up. Like, what?
Both of us are jet lagged and you're making these terrible statements and I don't understand what's going on.
I'm just trying to move on. That's all.
I mean, BA was one of the founding airlines of Amadeus. So I'll give him that.
Yes. Yes.
I don't understand what BA has to do with American Airlines giving slots to Alaska Airlines.
I'll get there. Yeah, I'll get there. Let me cook. All right. So Alaska was trying to get slots at Heathrow. They lost in the general allotment of slots, right? That's correct. Like they
tried for free slots and didn't get them.
And they didn't get them. So we found out via a filing through the slot control arbiter that they have traded slots with AA or are going to lease slots from AA. For Seattle to London Heathrow.
Yeah.
it's weird because the actual filing says that AA is giving up a JFK slot, but there's no I haven't seen a JFK flight drop off the schedule for AA.
No, the only Miami makes flight that's being dropped.
It's a Miami flight that's being dropped, and I think BA is going to backfill that flight.
They haven't yet, I don't believe.
But I think they will. That's the thing that I don't get is like, it's a summer only lease. Does BA care about Miami in the summer?
I don't think so.
Why?
Because traffic to, well, the only reason the only reason BA would care about Miami in the summer is for demand from Miami, not to Miami.
Gotcha. Okay.
To Miami is a much more winter dependent market for Europe.
Yep.
And you see that all the European carriers like Lufthansa did it. The Discover or Condor, one of them, I think, had a seasonal slot service to Miami. It's definitely a winter seasonal destination.
Gotcha. So Seattle to London looks like it lands at 2:05, which I think the math on that is like a 7:30 or 8 p.m. departure from Seattle.
It's not bad.
Which is not bad. And then it's a 4 p.m. departure back from Heathrow to Seattle, which probably lands at 7 p.m., I would guess, 6 or 7 p.m.
I mean, does that mean they need just over one plane to do the full round trip?
I think so, because it would have to be like a 6 p.m. arrival into Seattle, and then they just turn it.
Yeah, but can you turn a plane in 60 minutes? You wouldn't schedule that for an international long haul, typically.
Well, what is it in the summer at Seattle to Heathrow? Is it like 8 hours? 8.5?
But I don't know offhand.
Like, I honestly don't know that they would want to go 8 p.m. as the departure time.
Yeah, so Delta has, you said it's a 2 o'clock arrival? So
yeah, 2:05 p.m.
So Delta has an 8:25 that lands at 2:15, so call it an 8:15 departure.
Yep.
And a 5:25 that lands at 7:45, so a 4 o'clock lands at 6:20.
So they have an hour and 40 minutes to turn it.
You could do that. It's tight, but you could do that.
The thing that you have to do, though, is you have to tow that plane from the international gates at SeaTac back then, to...
Yeah, now I'm shaking my head a whole lot. If they've got to move the plane, then hell no.
Wait, do the north gates even support a wide body?
I think some of them do, and at least the D gates do.
Okay.
I mean, does Seattle not board anything out of the international area?
I have to look. I think the Hawaiian flight does, yeah.
Yeah, a bunch do. So, I mean, in theory, they could just use the gates on the south pier.
I just didn't know if Hawaiian does.
I mean, I guess, it is Hawaiian still, because right, it's their 787, but...
I think that's my only, like...
Yeah, if they have to tow the plane, an hour 40 turn isn't happening. If they do it from where it lands, it's vaguely tolerable.
Yeah, the thing with the towing, I just don't know if they use the south gates. Does Alaska actually use the south gates for anything except international arrivals? I've never seen anything depart there. And listeners, if you know better, tell us, because I'm...
But they could easily change that. Right. This is a slightly different situation than what they do today, where all their international flights are 737s.
True. I think they struggle. Like, the south gates are already full. Like, it's packed.
But how full is it at that hour of the night?
Turkish. You've got Turkish. You got the Asia flights, like the Taipei.
But those are much later, aren't they?
There's like a stretch between 10:30 and midnight.
Yeah. You're 4 hours, 6 hours before that now.
Yeah. But I don't think they tow those planes. Some of them they do, but some of them they don't.
But maybe that's what they do. They force them to tow them back into the parking area behind us.
Yeah, could be.
Push them back off the gates for a few hours.
Yeah, could be it. Here's my question. Everyone is talking about how expensive this must have been for Alaska. I don't know. We don't have any inside information. I don't think it was that expensive. I think AA was like, we don't need a second Miami flight. You can take that slot. Here's a price for it. We're happy to take some cash. But why wouldn't Alaska try for like the free slots at Gatwick or anywhere else?
Because no one wants to go to Gatwick.
I would go to Gatwick.
I would love to go to Gatwick, but I stand by what I've said in the past. I think Gatwick is seeing a resurgence. Air France just added flights to De Gaulle.
To Gatwick.
Is that because they can't get into Heathrow though? Or is there actually like, right at some point, if you can't get, and I still stand by and I have flown into probably almost all of the London airports at this point. Heathrow is not my favorite by any stretch, but people want to go to Heathrow. Like, it offers more connections. There's whatever the reasoning is. People want Heathrow even for going just to London without connections. And it's hard to make the market work anywhere else. We've seen the Gatwick JFKs are gone. JetBlue started with had Heathrow, added Gatwick. Gatwick became seasonal. Heathrow stuck around, right? Like,
I think part of the problem with Gatwick is a marketing problem. People are programmed to think that it is far and not the London airport.
And it is far, but it's direct to, I mean, like, I think the train stops are better. Like,
it depends where you're going in London, right? If you're going to central or east London, Gatwick is more practical.
Yep.
If you're going to western London, Heathrow's easier.
You're talking like Hammersmith or like something like that?
Hammersmith, Knightsbridge, Kensington.
Yeah.
Right. But if you're going to Victoria, you're going to east London or even to over towards London Sea, like the financial area, it's probably faster to go to Gatwick and then to come up that way.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Just for what it's worth, departure times, what time do we say this was leaving? At like 8?
8:15.
Yeah, so the only other, the Turkish flight leaves at 7:10. There's a Iceland Air at 7 and a Lufthansa to Munich at 6:50. Aer Lingus at 6:45, Air France at 6:30.
So that
then, yeah, but then you got a BA flight at 8:20. A Delta flight at 8:25, and then Manila is at not till 11:10, and the late Iceland Air flight is not till 11:25. So there's a couple planes that will be parked at the gates, but not a ton.
Yeah, so they got like 6 gates that they can use, so that's good. Yeah,
yeah, and that's I looked at late May. I'm sure it maybe gets a little busier midsummer, but the Delta flight to Taipei is at 4:20.
I wonder if that means they're gonna have the customers use the BA lounge, because like Alaska doesn't have any like anything over there.
3 hours.
So,
yes, there's a lot of midnight or between midnight and two, there's 4 flights to Taipei.
Yeah. It's wild.
Ava at 12:50, China Airlines at 1:10, Starlux at 1:15, and Ava again at 1:50.
Yep.
Ava's got wingtip flights.
Yeah. Ava runs doubles. It's insane.
I mean, an hour apart, but still, yeah. Wow. Okay, cool.
All right. So then, did you want to review all the transatlantic we know?
No, I never got the data together. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about non-real ID, the fee that's coming. So if you don't have a real ID today, you can show up to the airport. And I think it's just like they have to verify your ID, right? Like
you're a non-ID passenger, basically.
And it just takes a little longer. What's coming is a fee that you pay on the spot.
You have to prepay it on the website, $45.
So it's a tax. For not getting a real ID. Why not
valid for 10 days?
Why not just tell people get the real ID?
And well, that did, but that hasn't worked.
I mean, I don't know why we wouldn't just say you can't fly and be done with it.
Because you can't actually stop people from flying that way.
Sure, we can. We stop people all the time. I can't get on a flight to, you know, Mexico without a passport. So
domestic is different, Stephen.
I know. There's interstate laws and all that shit. But it seems like we're just imposing a fee for no reason. Like we're just trying to condition out of people this no real ID thing.
I mean, money does change behavior, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And what bothers me about this most of all is the government has decided that flying without a real ID means you are defaulting into a registered traveler program. And the legislation authorized the TSA to charge people for being part of a registered traveler program. And that's how PreCheck came about. That's what this legislation was for.
And they're using that to charge.
They're using that legislation to impose a fee on people who don't have real IDs. And that's where I think it's bullshit.
I mean, is the real ID really necessary, right? Like, that's the other way I could go on this. Is it really necessary? If you have a driver's license, we know who you are. Like,
we don't, Stephen. Let me tell you. I've sat in those legislative sessions. Now the idea for, and doesn't matter who you are because this has gone on for 20 plus years now. Does knowing who you are actually matter to security? But, right, like anybody should be able to, depending on who no matter who you are, if you're a dangerous person, like, can you do anything just as a regular individual? And does it matter? But yeah, not great.
In my mind.
The part where they're clearly manipulating the intent of Congress on this is just what this is what pisses me off the most.
I wonder if people who have a passport realize that they have a real ID if they don't actually have a real ID driver's license.
Many do not, based on the responses I got on social media for this, but eventually they figure it out.
Yeah, okay. That's what I figured.
But how do people take their passport on a domestic trip?
I think it's my primary form of ID when I fly.
Not mine.
Anywhere. No, it's not yours.
Stacey, you don't,
I use my passport card.
You don't use your passport on the road, Seth? At all? Really? Why?
Because I don't want to lose it.
Oh. I mean, that has happened to you, so.
No, I've never lost my passport, but I don't want to, and it's not, I don't think it was. I don't think I have a passport card, right? That you have to pay extra for the passport card, right?
It's like $35 extra, right?
Yeah.
I speak to
which, I do have my global entry card somewhere, but I saw you see me looking through my desk. It's around here somewhere, I thought, but anyway.
So here's a question for you guys. I have a year, a little less than a year. I have 11 months left on my passport. Do I renew it now or do I wait?
Well, not now because you're going to need it to go to Europe in January.
I'll go up to Seattle and just do it same day. Like,
if you're going to do it same day, you've got some wait available. Like, pick a time where you want to go to Seattle anyways, but
yeah. Yeah. But there's no like drive besides that to get the new, because I have to get the new passport. I'm getting the new version.
Now with the plastic page.
Yeah.
All I will say is make sure when you do that, you update your global entry profile, because the guy in front of me in global entry at Dulles the other day did not. And it was the slowest global entry experience I've ever had. And I was pretty upset. And Linnea was in front of him and I got behind him. And that was bad.
Did they have the single camera at Dulles or multiple stations?
Multiple stations set up and it was stare at the camera. Okay, please proceed. It took me 3 different tries and I had to move to a second thing. I don't know if it's because I have my glasses on or not. But it took me multiple tries. And it doesn't say like, sorry, that didn't work. Please look again. It just like goes back to the main page. So I'm like, did it scan me or not? And eventually I got a, okay, please proceed. I walked up. There's this guy like went up to the line, had taken his picture, said, please proceed. And then he got there and like had a 5-minute conversation. It was probably 30 seconds, but had this a very long conversation with the agent, stepped back out of line behind the line. Like, and started rummaging through his bag, managed to pull out his global entry card, walked back up, and that's, he found it between when Linnea and I got called up to go through. So he went ahead of me because he had been, you know, in line already. And I was being nice. Lesson learned here, don't do that. But I like had a, then I started to overhear the conversation of, did you get a new passport? Yes. Oh, well, you need to register that in your profile, blah, blah, blah. And then he had to call over a different agent to look at something because it still wasn't right in the computer. And eventually, like, they opened a second lane and I went through that one. And I don't know what happened to this guy, but
how is it that it's not automatic, though?
That is a very good question. I don't like
it. It's like, you'll have one job. It's packed.
You want the State Department and the CBP to talk to each other?
Yeah. I mean, I would assume they're already doing that to kick people out. I mean, why not do it for those of us that are trying to get back in? I don't understand.
That's the problem. You're trying to get back in.
Anyway. All right. Let's talk about ITA, the airline. They're talking about going to Houston, Intercontinental.
Which is, I didn't realize there'd never been a Houston Rome flight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Houston-Rome and Houston-Paris. Paris was...
That's not true. Condor's last Paris back in the day.
For a little while, and then they killed it.
They had it for a fair bit of time.
Yeah, it was a little while.
Okay, well, we'll have to figure out how long it actually lasts.
And Air France has had a flight in the past.
Yes, Air France has had a flight, but never had Rome. I mean,
Alitalia was too broken to fly to yet another city.
Yeah, and I think United or Continental at the time was happy to pass people through Amsterdam on to...
Or through Newark
or through Frankfurt or, you know, one of those. So.
Yeah, depending on half the lines they were in at which time. Yeah, I just ran a quick search. It tells me that the route has never operated. Past 20 years, there hasn't been a nonstop Houston to Rome.
I mean, when you think about it, though, as a whole, aside from Alitalia, Rome has not seen much service from U.S. carriers. Until the last 2 or 3 years.
And it's very seasonal.
Yeah.
Is it, I mean, we've talked about this before in the show. Rome is the touristy destination. Milan's the business destination.
Yes.
Why is it that more flights get added to Rome? Is Milan just overrun? Is it too busy? Is there not enough business demand?
Well, Rome is ITA's hub.
Fair, but wouldn't they want to run if to your business centers? Like, isn't that where the money is?
your implication here that ITA as an airline has been trying to make money rather than serve the politicians who live in Rome befuddles me.
fair enough.
This has legitimately been like the longstanding critique of Alitalia and ITA. Not the ITA transition, but the last bankruptcy when they tried to rebuild themselves. Well, why are you still keeping your hub in Rome instead of moving it to Milan? Because that's where actually the money is. And they're like, yes, but people are here. And that was the final decision.
makes a ton of sense.
And as you note, ITA on the back of their planes has the logo inspired by Alitalia. So they're clearly not actually trying to make money. So we'll see what happens with the Lufthansa tape sort of taking over. But yeah.
So when does this start? I guess that's the important piece.
May 1st, three times a week. June 1st, it becomes five times a week. It will run through October 24th.
So it's just summer seasonal.
Yeah. Awesome. But what I would say at this point is, and we've talked about this far too much on the show, but like, infinite demand to Italy and Southern Europe in the summer.
I guess I
don't get it either.
One humid destination to another hot destination. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Let's talk about JV then, stuff going on. So Lufthansa is talking about trying to get ITA added to the JV, the Lufthansa United Transatlantic JV.
A++. Wasn't there a whole thing about this during the original approval that they weren't going to be allowed to?
I thought so.
Yep.
Okay. I guess we just like did it anyways, and now we're like pretending that ruling never happened.
We're just like, oops. And now they're part of the JV. Oh.
So we're here now.
And then the other piece that's interesting is Lufthansa's also talking about adding TAP to the JV.
We'd have to buy TAP first.
So, but they're looking at that, right?
Yes. Would they have to buy TAP, or if TAP is interested in joining the JV and Lufty's pushing for it, why wouldn't that be possible?
I don't think there's a scenario where TAP survives without being bought by someone else, right? The government is trying to sell it off. And so, you know, yes, you're right, Faz. If they were to remain an independent airline, then they could do it without being part of without being owned by Lufthansa. They could just be TAP and, you know, also be part of the JV because they're an independent airline, and that'd be great. But IAG and Air France KLM and Lufthansa are all trying to buy them. So I don't see how it happens outside of that.
It'd be a bummer to lose them out of Start Lines.
TAP?
Yeah.
How often are you flying TAP?
I've flown them enough, to be honest.
You have office. You have work in Lisbon, don't you?
Yeah, we have an office in Lisbon. So, yeah. I mean, I think it would be a bummer just because they have, in the past, Foz, offered very reasonable prices across the Atlantic in business class. And that's...
That I understand. The problem is if they join the JV, that's gone.
That's true.
But that potentially helps them with their financial situation.
Yes. it's a conundrum.
Yeah. Gosh, why do they keep losing money while they're doing this terrible... They have the terrible business practices that we might fix if Lufthansa owns them.
They have these really cheap fares to San Francisco in business class. We just can't figure it out. Anyway, Emirates A350-900 ULRs are coming.
The first one was delivered, maybe?
But they don't have the extra tanks?
This is where I find it interesting. So, yes, they have the first flights have run and arrived in Adelaide earlier last week. And what's interesting about this, and they announced this a couple months ago, they were going to have some that were going to have basically a ULR, ultra long range configuration, but they were super vague about the fuel tanks on that. And I tried to follow up and try to get information, couldn't get anything, couldn't make it, and whatever. They have finally, and there's a Aviation Week story I got a link to in the show notes here, basically said the way that they're doing it is that Airbus modified the fuel system rather than adding fuel tanks. So they're using the existing tanks and they're filling them more.
I mean, wouldn't Singapore be going, excuse me, could you do that for us?
Well, but I think the difference is Dubai to Adelaide is a shorter flight than Newark, New York.
It's 15 hours now is the range.
So I wonder if this is just you can put some more fuel in the tanks and we're going to reduce the number of seats and we'll call it a ULR.
I don't think they reduced the number of seats.
But I think they did, though, because it has premium economy now.
They didn't reduce the number of seats relative to their other 350s. It's the same cabin layout.
Okay.
I believe.
So they can top the tanks up more, and it's enough to get them to Adelaide?
apparently.
Huh. Good on them, I guess. I mean, I thought the whole point of the ULR was to put the extra tanks in.
Well, yeah, but and I think to Faz's point, it really is more. 15 hours is different than 20.
True. Yeah. So I'm guessing Qantas's will still get the.
Yeah, that's the 1,000. We'll definitely have the additional tanks.
The ULRs. Yeah.
Although this is interesting. It actually is a different number of seats. There's a 298 and a 312 seat layout.
So they probably reduce the number of seats as well.
Yeah, now I gotta figure that out. And that's exciting. BWG is Baghdad, right? Yeah, Baghdad actually gets both planes, depending on configurations. What the hell? Make it really hard to figure out the layout of these planes. 32, 21, 259 is the standard layout.
32,
28, 238
is the
ULR
layout.
Okay. Well, now we know.
Let's talk about Qatar Airways had its leadership change, as the airport did as well.
Yeah, this is a weird one. Over the weekend, they announced a unexpected, unplanned, but new CEO. And it's the guy who used to run operations for Hamad International Airport, which is the same route as the old guy. I don't remember any of their names because none of them is Akbar. Al-Baker, none of them had, wasn't as exciting and didn't have any, you know, the character and charisma. An industry titan. It's super weird that they're suddenly, like, 2 years in, this guy's out all of a sudden. But the new guy basically followed his same path of how he got into the role, did all these other things, has aviation experience, yada, yada, yada. So we'll see.
Interesting.
Yeah. I want to know if this now means that they'll finally have premium economy on board.
Probably not.
And a weird one. Akbar has famously quoted multiple times, "We will never have premium economy as long as I'm in charge," including like his last public appearance at a conference right before he retired, and like was emphatic about, "Well, as long as I'm in charge," and like in retrospect had a sort of a smile about it, a smirk. In my conversation, I asked him, I saw him there, and he had like a smirk about it, and he hadn't announced his retirement yet at that point and said it. And I was like, in retrospect, he knew he was on his way out. He knew he was done. But like, did he think that they were going to change it after he left? And they still haven't. I don't know. Yeah. We've had some premium economy conversation and bonus topics too. So,
yep.
I don't get too much into it, but.
And then Paris, De Gaulle is getting a terminal number rechange. Like they're changing the numbers at De Gaulle.
Yes. And it's interesting. To say the least. Terminal 1 remains Terminal 1.
Okay.
That's good news. Terminal 2 has like 18 different terminals in it, right? And there's the 2E, I get, which is like the main Air France KLM section, that's going to mostly become Terminal 5. Come. Also 2TF and 2TG, and then 2TEK, EL, and EM. The numbering system is terrible right now.
Yeah,
those become Terminal 5, 6, and 7. EK, EL, and EM will become all Terminal 5. And those are, if I remember correctly, those three are the non-Schengen portion.
2E and K.
2EK, EL, and EM.
Yeah, those are all the non-Schengen plates. Yeah.
But there's 2TF will become Terminal 6. 2TA and 2TC will become Terminal 3. Terminal 3 will become Terminal 2. And 2TB and 2TD will become Terminal 4.
Clear as mud.
Terminal 1 stays the same with the tubes and the terrible experience, though.
Yeah, but is Terminal 1 really a bad experience if you stay within Terminal 1?
If you don't have to leave Terminal 1, it's not that bad. But yes. It's when you have to leave Terminal 1 that you're
Some transit challenges too, but no. Just getting in and out of it's kind of annoying relative to being T2 with the trains.
It reminds me a lot of Terminal B at Newark.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Not great, not terrible.
Also, they're changing the gate lettering. So Terminal 1 will get S gates and R gates, and they list them in that order instead of R and S, which is super exciting. The new Terminal 2, which is the old Terminal 3, would become the Z gates, like Victor. The new Terminal 3, which was the old T2A and T2C, will become the F gates. The new T4 will become the G gates and the H gates. T5 will become the B, C, and D gates. T6 will be the E gates, and T7 will be the N gates. So non-contiguous lettering along the way, but I think, no, not even that. I was going to say, I think it's because they're not reusing any of the letters from before, but they are, because B, C, and D were all used in old T2s.
But why even do this? Why couldn't you just have numbers and be done with it?
Like the 100 series, the 200 series, the 3-4, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be smarter. JFK is doing that, actually.
I mean, it's like, okay, well, this makes sense. I'm at gate 546. All right, done.
It's in Terminal 5. Yeah, JetBlue has renumbered its gates in Terminal 5 as part of that process. The other JFK terminals are all apparently doing it as part of the transitions with the new construction and whatnot.
Interesting. And the numbering is what bothers me more than the renumbering of the terminals actually makes some sense to me because it's confusing.
No, I don't think I think three buildings that are separate that are all part of the same terminal number is still confusing, but yes.
I mean, I guess the downside is, like, you can't really check in at terminal whatever it's going to be 5. Like, you can't check in there.
But you can't check in at, like, 2TL, 2TEL.
Okay. Because
it's, right, you check in at 2TEK and then take that train out to the L gate to the M gates.
So that's where, yeah, that part's going to be confusing for people.
Or you'll always go to, you'll be in T5 and you'll have to take a train to the C gates or the D gates now instead of the L gates or the M gates.
Oh, clear as mud again. Foz, any thoughts?
I avoid Paris them as much as I can.
He's like, I just make it easy. I just don't go there.
Yeah.
I go to Orly.
I wish I could fly to Orly. No, I would just fly to Brussels and take the train.
Oh, man. All right. Anything else, you guys?
Not for me.
We got TAP coming up. Some talk about that. Some talk.
Sorry. I'm rereading the story, and they're arguing that it is going to remove the headache by renumbering these gates.
That must have been what the consultants told him.
Which headache?
No more terminal headaches. How Rossi Airport will simplify its signage. That's the headline.
Good stuff. So in the bonus topics for our Patreon supporters, we're going to talk about TAP's not quite premium economy. Duffy wanting us to dress better on airplanes. Fly Bondi and its new lease on life. Indigo and their mess with pilot staffing. Foz's trip and Seth's trip. So yeah. Stick around for that. If you're not a Patreon supporter, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.